Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, one of them plans to make America great again in his first week in office. The other is set to embark on his last major overseas visit to visit the Pope. A president-elect Donald Trump is arguably already setting the political agenda as Joe Biden, the outgoing president, eyes his legacy following a turbulent 4 years in office. Well, joining for more on this is Greg Swenson, chairman of Republicans Overseas, and Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and political commentator. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Larry.
Good morning, Colin, Larry.
Good morning to you. Yeah, Larry, you're in the States at the moment. What's the reaction been to the attack in New Orleans?
I think it's very widespread revulsion, Colm. Just a horrendous, horrendous act. We know 15 people are dead, many more are injured. Hearing the first-person testimony of people who were there brings home just how awful an incident this is, which seems to have been perpetrated by an American citizen, but one who recently converted and was radicalized and, you know, flew the flag of Islamic State. And perhaps the most worrying thing about this is that they're saying that he clearly has not acted alone, and one wonders just how deep the connections here, whether this is part of any planned, sustained campaign of terror. We saw something happen in Germany not so long ago. So it's deeply worrying, obviously, at one level, and obviously profoundly sad at this time of new year for the families affected.
All right. Greg, we heard from an expert on radicalization earlier, Peter Neumann, who wrote a book on Donald Trump's counterterrorism operations in the last administration. Would you expect that this might perhaps be give pause for thought and a rethink on withdrawing American troops from Syria, maybe on engaging ISIS there? Or how would you imagine the Trump administration's response to an attack like this would unfold?
Yeah, I think if anything, it's a great question. If anything, it will encourage President Trump to sort of go back to that playbook of his first term, and also consider keeping the base in Syria, which I think is very useful. And there's actually been recent use of military force there. It kind of flies under the radar a little bit, but they have been doing that. And so, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, as Larry said, it's really unsettling, and I think it kind of goes back to the positives of the Trump, you know, 1.0, where he was, you know, an anti-war president and was very careful about using military force. But when he did, like he did in Syria, like he did with taking out Soleimani in Iran, Baghdadi as well from ISIS, you know, I think he's smart about it, and I think he'll be smart about it again.
All right. Although, well, a clear difference between the two. One, Baghdadi in charge of ISIS, and obviously Qasem Soleimani from the Iranian Republican Guard. Let's go to the politics of this. Larry, you've spent Christmas in Boston. Joe Biden's preparing to leave office. How are his last weeks in office being viewed? Because it seems to be very much dominated by the discussion of what's coming next under Donald Trump. So is Biden, I suppose, to counter that, trying to cement his own legacy?
Well, I mean, I think they're quiet. I think that, you know, look, President Biden has been fairly quiet since the election took place. I think all of the attention is focused in on what the Trump presidency is going to be like. I mean, I think there are certain things Biden is trying to do to cement his legacy. We saw that he commuted a number of federal death penalty sentences, that, you know, he may try to do some things on immigration and other issues potentially to try to stem what Democrats regard as the worst instincts of a potential new Trump administration. So I think he's doing all of that. And, you know, as I know we may discuss, I know that he's going to see Francis, which obviously is something that means a lot to him personally. But the issue here, I think, Colm, is that you know, for an awful lot of Americans, you know, that the reality is that the people on the Republican side just didn't have any use for the Biden presidency and thought he was weak. And on the Democratic side, you know, a lot of people thought that, look, he held on way too long and he is to blame for Trump's election and return to the White House. So he's not leaving to any great fanfare.
All right. What's the motivation behind Pope Francis being the last visit of his term as president? Is this just, as you say, a personal thing he wanted to do, or is there any, I suppose, political or foreign policy reason for it?
Well, I think, yeah, I think number one, it is a very personal visit. I think we know that President Biden is a practicing Catholic, that he is advanced in years, that he sees this as, you know, a great opportunity from a point of view of his own faith. And I think it obviously means a lot to him at a personal level. Always in terms of visiting the Pope, the optics, politically speaking, of the Catholic Church and Catholics in the United States. And look, the reality is that Joe Biden lost Catholics by a pretty solid margin to Donald Trump. And, you know, reaching out as a Democratic president, albeit in his last days, to the Pope, there's obviously a political dimension to that as well. And maybe that's something that the party will take up in 4 years as it tries to figure out what to do next in the wake of, you know, again, Republicans having control of the presidency, the White House, the Congress, and the United States Supreme Court.
I mean, in terms of the set pieces, the public set pieces, Joe Biden is going to deliver Jimmy Carter's eulogy at the funeral next week. What do you think the message in that will be? It'll obviously be a tribute to Jimmy Carter, but do you think it may be seen as an opportunity to pick up on some of the themes that were admired about Carter as a message to the next administration?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt he's going to try to hammer home this idea of civility, of how people who are trusted with the highest office in the land should comport themselves. And I think he's going to point to both what Jimmy Carter did, as president, but I think more importantly, I think most of us could agree that Carter had actually more influence after he was president than while he was president. I think he's going to point to some of that legacy, and a lot of it, Colin, is going to be some not-so-veiled digs at his, you know, the man who's going to succeed him. And I think that there may be some effort to sort of nudge Trump into a little bit of a different space, perhaps, than he occupied in the first term. We'll see whether that works or not, however.
Okay, that indeed remains to be seen. Greg, Donald Trump is going to the Carter funeral. He had some nice things to say about Jimmy Carter, which may have surprised some people. You know, I suppose, normally speaking, at this country at least, there's a tradition of don't speak ill of the dead. Maybe Donald Trump was taking that approach, but maybe there were some things he admired in Jimmy Carter, and if so, what were they in your estimation?
Yeah, I think, you know, Carter should get more credit for some of the things he did to pave the way for Ronald Reagan, and in a negative way, he was considered a weak president, so that's why Reagan won 44 states, and which is really difficult for an incumbent to lose that badly, to lose in a landslide to Reagan in 1980. But in a way, in a perverse way, that kind of set Reagan up for, you know, the Reagan Revolution and real transformative change in government. But also, you know, he started the deregulation trend that Reagan really is, one of the things Reagan is famous for was deregulation. But, you know, Jimmy Carter started that with deregulating the railroads, deregulating trucking, as well as the airlines. And so that was, you know, kind of a positive, you know, laying the groundwork for, you know, for Reagan and Reaganomics. And then, of course, he selected Paul Volcker as the Fed chairman, and that, you know, who Reagan kept. But people sort of remember, they always attach Volcker to Reagan and, you know, reducing interest rates, reducing inflation, and as well as the deregulation on the supply side.
So you could see Donald Trump trying to pick up on some of those issues and continue them in his term.
Yeah, because it's pretty consistent with the Republican playbook of the last few generations, really since 1980.
Right.
And so, you know, in many ways, Carter laid the groundwork for that.
Okay. Well, look, we're less than 3 weeks, as I said at the outset, from President Trump's inauguration. What's your best guess for the first 100 days in office, Greg, especially when it comes to something like executive orders? He's talked about action on the Mexico border, ending birthright citizenship, pardoning January 6th rioters. I mean, would you expect to see all of that being done, or all that and more?
Yeah, I think it'll be maybe, I don't know about all that. I'm not sure about the the birthright citizenship. I don't know if that's a trigger he could pull right away. But But and I think there's some nuance to that. But I think the other things he can do, and then add to that the liberalization of the energy sector. I think that's day one material. And you saw, you know, pretty dramatic difference between the two presidents when Biden took over. You know, he shut the Keystone Pipeline. He reduced the sanctions. He eliminated sanctions on Nord Stream 2. It was kind of reverse psychology. You know, you're letting Russia build their pipeline to Germany, and then at the same time you're restricting energy production in the U.S. So I think you'll see a real surge in, you know, probably a decrease in energy prices. We've seen that already, but also, you know, a liberalization of the energy sector, and that should help with inflation. That should help with economic growth as well. So I think that's a big piece of his day one or his first 100 days.
Okay, what would the concerns be, Larry, on that front in terms of the executive orders and the action that might be taken in the first 100 days, given that Donald Trump looks like he's going to hit the ground more shovel ready than he was first time round?
Yeah, well, obviously, there'd be great concern about, you know, rolling back some of the environmental protections instilled by the Biden administration. I also think on the immigration front, I think that Americans are broadly supportive of the idea that people who are criminals, people who have committed crime, people who are of dubious moral character, that they don't belong in the United States. But Trump has to be wary of pushing too far. If it gets to a situation where people in communities, people who, you know, go to schools, who play sports with other kids, if we see internment camps, anything like that, I think he could get some backlash on that front, because I think it's a lot easier to oppose illegal immigration or the illegal immigrant in the abstract than it is when it's a real human being. So I think he has to be careful on that front. So how hard he's going to push is a great mystery. And I think one of the things we should say is anyone who predicts with any degree of certainty what Donald Trump is going to do, I think is making it up, because Trump's big hallmark is uncertainty. He likes to keep everybody guessing. And even if we look at the people who he's nominated for key positions, yes, we focused in on some of the controversial ones who may have a difficult time getting into their position. But he's also nominated individuals who are going to have pretty broad support. So it's a mixed bag. And the last thing is really, how much energy is Trump going to bring to the job? Was this really all about winning, about getting back in the White House? And then is he really serious about these policy objectives? Again, we just don't know. My guess is somewhere in the middle of those two extremes.
Okay. One of the things that's watched, Greg, is, you know, the approach to the Middle East. Donald Trump has often said he can cut quick peace deals. There was a hope that there would be some kind of a ceasefire concluded before he came into office. I think he was hopeful even of that himself. But at the moment, that doesn't look like it's in the offing. Would you see any major change in US policy with regard to the support for Israel and what's been going on in the Middle East under Donald Trump? Or could you see maybe some pressure being applied there to try and get some kind of a ceasefire early?
Yeah, look, I think we all hope for a ceasefire, and I think that would have been one of Biden's, you know, legacies he was trying to accomplish, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen. But I think, you know, Trump has a really good track record in the Middle East. You had the Abraham Accords, of course. You had a real containment of Iran during the Trump years, and so that all changed with Biden when he tried to kind of revisit the JCPOA. He stopped enforcing sanctions on Iran, so they had a surge in revenues, also due to higher energy prices, which we can attach to the Biden administration. But, you know, that surge in revenues really enabled them to fund their proxies, and, you know, ultimately leading to October 7th and problems with the Houthis. It looks like in the last 6 months, the Israelis have really done a great job containing both Iran and the proxies. So it sets a nice table for President Trump to come in, pick up where he left off with the Abraham Accords, bring the Saudis back to the table. And, you know, he's indicated some willingness to talk to Iran rather than just go right to sanctions and embargoes. Either way, I think Iran has to be managed, and the Israelis, again, have done a good job of initiating that. So, you know, I'm optimistic about Middle East policy with Trump. There's a reason he's polling dramatically different than he was in 2016 or early 17 when he took over. He's polling in the low 50s overall. His administration, you know, the expectations of his administration is at 54, and then his his transition is polling at 55. So, you know, this is a really good sign where both he was stuck at, you know, wrapped around 40 on a good day back in January of 17. So I think the voters, the people are much more confident in this Trump administration than they were 8 years ago.
Okay. Greg Swenson, chairman of the Republicans Abroad UK, and Larry Donnelly, law lecturer in University of Galway and political commentator. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. Coming up, should pupils be allowed to set their own school timetables or even be offered part-time hybrid learning?
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.